The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
For the second time in three seasons, the mighty Tigers from Punt Road are premiers in the AFL. Does a dynasty await this side, or have they already missed their chance? They missed out in 2018, but like Ben Dixon, do another couple of flags loom for this mighty Richmond Premiership side? We'll analyse them, we'll analyse the Giants and the fallout and what it all means for Leon Cameron's men, as well as look ahead to everyone's favourite time of the year, the AFL trade period. This is the next edition of the Fox Footy Podcast, all thanks to Nutri-Grain. Ben Waterworth with you for the Fox Footy Podcast, as is the usual crew wrapping up the grand final, Tom Morrison, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxi.
I'm sitting, hitting tweet on asking for questions right now.
Excellent. This shows how organized we are.
We'll see if we get any questions later in the podcast. Hello, gentlemen. We decided to do one this year because we're biased and Victoria won the flag.
Yeah.
And all Victoria is happy for Richmond.
We copped a lot of heat about not doing a podcast last year. Have we ever got to the reason why we didn't do an end of season?
Probably because how I'm feeling right now. We're all a bit flustered, kind of.
It's at a busy time.
At the end.
Surely we can put aside 30 to 40 minutes for our loyal Fox Footy fans.
This is what we're doing right now, Tom.
Yeah.
Putting aside 30 or 40.
I think we can safely say we made a mistake not doing it last year. We didn't put a full stop at the end of the season.
I think that's fair.
It's good PR kind of strategy from you, just falling on your own sword.
Yeah.
A year later.
The season finished with an AFL grand final. It should have finished with an AFL grand final.
Yes.
There was no full stop.
Okay, I see what you did there. Sure.
Did you mind it or not?
It's okay.
How are you, Ben?
I'm tired, but I want to ask you guys, what was your highlight from Saturday? And Tommy can probably give us a perspective, or maybe not necessarily a highlight, but just something that was really poignant for you at the ground. What was something that really stood out for you? Because you were in the press box and then went down into the Giants rooms afterwards.
I will let Max use the obvious highlight, I think, if he would like to use the obvious highlight. My highlight was Trent Cotchin running into goal and the oceans parted in front of him. All of a sudden, the entire MCG was available and he had to take, I think he took a bounce, maybe took two bounces, and he kicked the goal, and it was just unbridled joy and celebration after that moment.
We had said in the office just before that, I think it was Sarah Ollie suggested that they needed a Richmond defender to come up and kick a goal, a Cameron Ling in 2011 type goal.
Yes.
And instead Koch got it.
Yep,
it was basically the exact same thing, but that was really the emotional cap on it.
If it was Basher who might have kicked a goal, that really would have brought the house down.
What was your highlight, Max?
Oh, there's this guy who was playing his first game. I don't know if anyone's heard.
Keith Batchelor.
Yes, in 1952. It was very exciting times. Marlon Pickett, as I believe is actually pronunciation.
But he pronounces it Marlon.
No, so I saw an interview from 3 years ago saying he preferred Marlon, but accepts that people say Marlon.
Really?
Mm.
Do you remember Marlon Samuels, the former West Indian hard-hitting all-rounder?
Who Shane Warne bashing all-rounder.
Yes, I forgot about that.
Yes. So I had a tweet from a user during the week pointing me back to an article I did back in 2015 about the top waffle prospects back in 2015. All of them have been drafted because there was heaps of players. Marcus Adams was one of them. Nathan Broad was one of them who played in his second flag. The last one who got drafted was Marlon Pickett. Now, I actually had Marlon spelled M-A-R-L-O-N because I reckon I thought at the time it was a typo. It had actually been done as a typo. But it was great to see Marlon get due recognition as well. Now, also joining us for a brief cameo on the Fox Footy Podcast, and he's looking quite fresh, actually, considering that he would have had quite a large weekend, is former St Kilda great, 287 games, Lee Montagna. Hello, Joey.
G'day, guys. Glad you said I look fresh, because I don't feel it, to be honest. It's been a big week. A bit of work and pleasure. The combination of the two catches up with me on a Monday.
How did you find the whole grand final experience on the weekend?
Well, like a lot of people, very disappointed. I was lucky enough that I was in a function, so it's halfway through the second quarter, went straight to the bar and caught up with a few mates, and that's where I spent the rest of the game.
Yeah,
what were we
going
to do, Maxie? I mean, the game was over midway through the second quarter.
I finally know how non-Geelong fans felt in 07.
Yeah, exactly,
that's
right.
That's what that was for me.
Yeah, very disappointing. And then some people reminded me of the grand final draw as well, which I've forgotten about too soon.
But yeah, far too
soon. That must have been quite similar.
Were Richmond exceedingly good or the Giants exceedingly bad, Joey?
No, the Giants just didn't play at their best. All you want in grand final is two teams at their best and made the best team when Giants didn't play anywhere near their best. So Richmond were good, but what Richmond have been for a long time, really. I don't think they were anything above and beyond. GWS just unfortunately didn't bring their best footy on the big day.
It felt like the consensus was that their season finished a week too late for the Giants.
Yeah, you could argue that. I always thought that four wins in a row to win that was going to be too much for them, and three travels in a row, again, a bit of bad luck with Phil Davis and Lachie Whitfield. It didn't add up for it to be the right time for GWS, but I think it's a start of a bit of a dynasty now for the Giants. I think their window is cherry ripe for the next 3 or 4 years, and I reckon the penny's dropped for them now. I think they know what it takes now.
Even though this is like their fourth consecutive finals appearance as well, you can only see it going up from here for the Giants.
I think this is now their window. Right. Absolutely.
How do you know when the penny's dropped for the Giants? How can you tell?
Well, two things. One, I've spoken to a couple of people at the Giants who just feel that towards the back half of this year, they started to learn about playing your role, being a bit more selfless, and just realising that the click as a team, because it does. Because it's a, what if it's sort of a period as a player. When you're younger, you just want to get a game. Then when you're at that sort of stage where you're established, very good player, you want to become a really good player and a star. Then as it evolves, you then realise, okay, it's not so much about me now, it's about the team. That's when you get all the accolades. And then you start gelling as a team. And I reckon they've now hit that little sweet spot where the players are playing next year, they'll play more for the team rather than themselves. And I reckon they can take their game to another level, even though they have been very good over the past 4 years.
Yep, their fourth consecutive finals appearance, getting to a grand final. Just what was your take on the Phil Davis selection in particular? Because dramatic scenes, Tommy was following it like a hawk from the press box, and everyone would have been seeing this fitness test 5 minutes before the team sheets are supposed to drop. And we kind of were still up in the air until probably about 2 p.m.
I can tell you, I was getting information from key GWS sources as recent as 15 minutes before the first bounce, saying he could still be an out here. Yeah. And someone from Richmond told me that they had information that he was doing a fitness test 2 minutes before they ran on the ground.
Yeah.
This was really tight.
Yeah, it was. And look, I understand giving your captain in your first grand final right up when they say you're giving him up to the last second. They literally were. I don't mind that. I don't think it upsets the playing group too much. They're going about their business. They're either going to get told Phil's going to play or Lachie Keith will step into his shoes. I don't think it affected them too much. Clearly, he was pretty injured, and the word is it was a pretty significant tear that he had in his calf. So, look, hindsight's a wonderful thing. Two of the three goals, I watched the first half of the replay last night. He was a bit unlucky. He was a free kick against Phil Davis on Jack Riewoldt. It had nothing to do with his calf. A second one, he got caught up in a bit of a stumble from another player that Jack Riewoldt took the mark on 50. Had nothing to do with his calf. Yeah. So I know he was sore, but you can argue that he was a bit stiff on a couple. But you live and die by the sword, and Richmond pulled the right strings, didn't they? Picking the players they did and the decisions they made, and GWS died by the sword.
Well, he did a fantastic job. Joey, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
AFL Tonight.
He's off to AFL Tonight right now.
On Fox Sports News and Fox Footy.
And he's also
well.
Part of the trade show on Fox Footy.
Oh, another trade podcast.
Well, it's a cousin podcast. Yeah,
the big family growing.
Cousin, it's called Trading
Day.
Trading Day.
Yes.
I should know that. Give it on
You're
the host.
Hosting it.
Yes.
It's not on Sky Business.
And that starts as a show on Fox Sports and Fox Footy. I think it's simulcast. At 5 p.m. on Wednesday, Wednesday, Thursday, then it starts on the trade period again on Monday, and it's Lee Montagna and David King, and then John Ralph and myself.
It's a strong lineup.
Well, three to four.
And me.
I'm just happy to just tee it up and they can hit it out of the park.
Speaking of strong, you demanded off the top of the Fox Footy podcast today, Tom.
I didn't demand it.
Yeah, no, there was demand. Pretty strong words to say for Australia's favourite segment to go off the top. It's now time for Fair or Farce.
Okay, first of all, I didn't demand it.
You demanded it.
I simply asked the question, would you like some content? I've got a fair or farce.
Like some content.
I hate content.
Now, how good is it, by the way, when Lee Montagna is walking past the office and I wave him in and he looks at his watch and says, I can't, and I wave him in again.
Oh, wow.
And then he comes in and joins the podcast and says that GWS is about to start a dynasty. Now, that is what you love. That's live podcasting for you. Hopefully, we're getting some questions in the mailbag,
we'll see.
Max. Now, there's five questions each year with fair or farce.
So it's a deep fair or farce.
It's the deepest one for the year, and rightly so. The grand final edition. Yep. Fair or farce, Ben.
Yes, Tom.
Marlon Pickett is the greatest grand final story ever.
Yeah, fair. I struggle to think of a more remarkable story. And congratulations to you for, if you didn't get the story first, Tom, last week, you're very close to getting it. You're getting information essentially at the same time as
Benny,
being published.
Fox Footy categorically broke the story first.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Claim it. You can float whatever you want.
Let's claim it. And you know what? This matters to the readers. They definitely care.
Everyone loves hearing about who breaks whose stories.
The crowd noise.
I'm joking, obviously.
The crowd noise for him on Saturday during the game when he kicked his first goal, and then the post-match medal acceptance on the dais was quite incredible.
The crowd noise when he kicked the goal was louder than when the final siren went.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the biggest grand final story of I don't know what it is. How's it bigger than the game?
I can't think of one bigger. I mean, part of that is that they were up by 89 points and clearly going to win from half time.
True, I get that, yeah.
So, you know, it takes a bit of the anticlimax.
He said with Daisy Pierce afterwards, Daisy asked him, when did he finally feel comfortable on the MCG stage? And he said, when I ran out for the first time.
Didn't bother him. He's 27. Yeah. He wasn't some kid. Yeah. I think that was a big part of why Dimmer was so comfortable.
Quite blown away by just how almost lackadaisical he seemed in the aftermath. It was a great effort by Marlon Pickett, and congratulations to him.
I don't know if you have another question about him, but I just want to say about the question of whether he should have been a Norm Smith contender or anything like that. He was the fifth or sixth best player on the ground.
Yeah.
Let's calm down a little bit. Maybe the story pumped it up a little bit more than that. And he finished, I think, third in the voting.
I think it was probably appropriate where he finished in the Norm Smith medal voting.
Given the story, it's fine.
Well, all five judges gave Dustin Martin best of field. Yeah. I agree with that.
I saw so many comments, people saying Basho Hooley was robbed again, and I don't get that. He was quite good, but Dusty was clearly best on ground.
Yeah, Dusty's a freak.
Yeah.
Max.
Hi.
Fair or farce, GWS embarrassed itself.
No, farce. These are just things that happens when you have a final series like the Giants did.
Yep.
When you have two finals decided by less than a goal and get to the grand final, that is the moment. And as we sort of mentioned with Joey before, that's just somewhat what happens. Teams do seem to have an emotional scar from a big grand final loss, admittedly. That does factor into some teams.
You had a stat yesterday that doesn't necessarily bode well for the Giants?
Yeah, I think every team that had lost a grand final by 40 points or more since 2000 has not won a final the next year.
That is a really interesting stat.
So a lot of those teams, you know, they're very different. You had your Sydney in 2015 when they went out in straight sets, and that was just because they had so many injuries and North Melbourne did North Melbourne things, and West Coast the year later lost to the Bulldogs. But it's crazy to think that teams from the grand final can drop out and not win a final or not even make the eight like a lot of teams did.
I'd love to see a stat on how teams fare the year after they go out in straight sets. For example, Hawthorne went out in straight sets last year. Yeah. Brisbane went out in straight sets this year. I'd love to see how teams go after the disappointment of going bang, bang.
From memory, not well.
Yeah,
I think that a lot of people would disagree with you, Max. I think that the Giants were embarrassing on grand final day. I know it could take the context out of it. They kicked three goals in a grand final, the lowest score in a long, long time.
It's not great. And I understand that point of view, and they probably feel embarrassed by it, but I'm a proponent of not going too hard at a team that loses the grand final like that. I think in that situation, what happened was you had the second quarter where a few free kicks went Richmond's way that arguably shouldn't have, led to goals. Those probably broke GWS's back. And when they're down 5-6 goals at halftime, they're so exhausted. There's so much going against them. I think Leon Cameron said yesterday, I believe it was, that you know we felt like we could try and do something. I was telling the guys we can just turn a few things around and get going, but it didn't work out for them. And it never looked like it once the third quarter began. So it's just too hard from there.
If this is a home and away game, there can sometimes be some complacency in the team that's leading via an unassailable lead because there's nothing really to play for anymore. And the team that's behind, it still has systems that they need to put in place for the following week. And they also don't want to be embarrassed and cop a huge hiding and then cop it on the track and cop it from the coach
lose
after the
percentage.
Game. Lose percentage. Whereas in a grand final, the team that's winning starts playing Harlem Globetrotters footy.
Oh, yeah.
And the team that's losing literally has nothing to play for. They are chasing tail, and it can easily happen where it blows out.
Richmond was not 89 points better than GWS.
No.
They were probably 10 goals better than GWS.
60, yep, I agree.
And then the margin blew out because of the factors that you just mentioned.
Ben, fair or farce, Phil Davis was selfish to play.
Yeah, I think farce. I listened to Dermot Brereton pre-game. So amid the drama on Saturday, and you know you were all on top of it, Tommy, but Dermot said that knowing Phil Davis, he would not be making this as a selfish decision.
No.
No doubt that he was desperate to play in a grand final and lead the team. I think that's if there was kind of a hint of selfishness, he wanted to lead the team because he's been at the Giants for, you know, for the whole time and worked his way through the tough times. But for mine, I think that the Giants, it didn't cost them the game.
No, it didn't.
It definitely didn't.
But that's
cost
not the question
game.
I'm asking.
No, I don't think he was. I don't think he was selfish. I think Phil has got a really good perspective on football and understands the game really well.
There's an element of self-interest. to wanting to play a grand final.
There's also double standards because Nigel Lappin plays with broken ribs and a punctured lung. Admittedly, he didn't know he had a punctured lung at the time.
Yeah.
And Jeremy McGovern plays with a really bad knock, like corky or ribs, wasn't it, injury last
bad
year.
Ribs injury.
And both Brisbane and West Coast win the grand final, and we say, how courageous was that?
Yeah.
But if you lose, you're thinking, geez, that's selfish to play. In the end, there's a lot of players on the ground that are carrying niggles.
Yep.
And it's all to what extent can you handle the pain and to what extent can you perform under duress.
Do we know what his actual injury problem
Phil Davis
was?
Well, we just heard Lee Montagne say it was a badly torn calf. And Lee Montagne, a moment before then, had said he'd spoken to people at GWS. Now, I'm not going to say who those people are, but I know that he played with Adam Schneider and Lenny Hayes.
You can sort of connect the dots, can't you?
Well, I don't know if they actually are them, but it would make sense that he gets told after the fact that Phil Davis is actually really badly hurt. And we said on the podcast last week, we won't know the full extent of Davis's injury.
Yeah, that's how it works.
If they win until after, and maybe because they lost, never.
Yeah.
Don't want to look like they're sort of making excuses.
Unless Joey just dropped a bomb just then.
Maybe he dropped a sneaky bomb. Mm. Max Farrah Fast, Collingwood would have given a better Yelp than GWS.
I said last week that GWS had a better chance of winning. So I'm going to stay consistent and say Fast.
But
Collingwood would have gotten closer than 89 points, I think.
Well, that's a better Yelp, isn't it?
No, but I think GWS was the best team and deserved to be there.
Mm. Okay, but that's not the question. You need to answer the question. If you think Collingwood would have been closer than GWS, then Collingwood would have given a bigger Yelp.
I suppose so, but...
That's fair then.
Fair, but I'm trying to look at things objectively. If you play that grand final 10 times, I don't think GWS loses by that much.
I agree.
Those
but
times.
You're answering the questions you want to answer. You need to stay true to the notepad.
I'm giving my opinion on the question.
Okay.
And what the question was.
Okay. Good stuff. Ben.
Geelong was the second best team this year.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's a good call.
And I think we said it before the prelim, that the 1 and 2 seeds were playing off in that prelim.
Yeah.
And I agreed with that. Richmond, Geelong were the two best teams.
Geelong stuffed a chance of the grand final.
Or did they ever?
Against Collingwood. That was the loss.
Yeah, even before then, Hawthorn and West Coast in round 23 really affected the whole finals.
So many dominoes.
And just for the record, I don't think GWS should feel embarrassed about the performance.
Okay.
You lose to me, you lose a grand final, you lose a grand final.
Yeah, that was my point.
You know, and players were crying in the rooms after Collingwood lost last year, and they performed admirably, and players were crying after GWS lost, and they didn't perform well. In the end, you either win or lose.
If you're a player, would you rather lose a grand final by a goal or by 89 points?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I'd actually rather lose by 89 points.
Yeah, I'd rather lose by 89 points.
You knew you were no shot on that day.
And I've played, again, I bring up my amateur cricket career.
Yes.
I've played finals before where we've lost and got belted. You know, we've bowled out for 120 chasing 330. And in a way, you're like, well, we're never really in it.
Yeah.
It was a shame we didn't give it a crack, but we're never really in it. We can't really go back and go, well, that moment cost us or I cost us there. It's just what it is. We just got heavily beaten on the day. Whereas if you lose by a little bit, you spend your whole life, and I'm sure Nathan Buckley will think this many times over, about specific moments that could have gone the other way, and your whole life becomes a different journey.
Do you want to be heartbroken or embarrassed?
Yeah.
That's the dilemma.
Insane. You don't want to lose at all. But I mean, I'm sure people would disagree with me there. Oh, at least I gave it a crack, but... I mean, Nick Riewoldt always says he did everything possible to win a flag, and he can sleep well knowing he did everything possible he could to win a flag. But geez, that drawn grand final must just, and the Geelong one just must play on his mind as well.
Yes.
Ben.
Mm.
Is it Ben's go?
You should label them.
I do. I just can't remember who went last. I should be. Anyway, we're only 26 weeks in. Ben, fair or fast, Toby Green's father being arrested is not news, and we should leave Toby alone.
No, I think that's a... That's a farce. So I think it is news.
That's disrespectful towards Toby to say that.
I'm staring you up, Ben. I know. Yeah. I think it's definitely news because it would have been reported nonetheless. It was reported. Like initial reports of the amount of arrests that were made at the MCG on the weekend were made public by Victoria Police. And then a few people connected the dots and Michael Green was arrested on the weekend for allegedly headbutting a female police officer, which if true is a shocking act. And that is that needs to be reported. And I think that can't be ignored, the fact that even though he probably has been estranged from Toby for quite some time, I still think that is newsworthy. And I think people, most people out there would be saying that it's probably not a story, but I saw a lot of feedback as well, understanding that is a story at the same time, from the punter.
Yeah, it's a story because a man who was at the footy allegedly hit a policeman. Now, you say the person's name, and it's Toby Green's father, but any educated, logical person appreciates that this is no slight on Toby Green.
No, not at all.
This is not saying Toby Green allegedly committed that crime.
Or is to blame for it in any way.
People get caught up in it. He might be affected by it, but it's absolutely not his fault what his father allegedly did.
This is also one of those things where the media at this point in 2019 can produce stories and know what people want to read based on how many people read stories.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Based on that, people thought it was news.
Yep. Max.
Hi.
Leon Cameron was out-coached, especially with his use of De Boer.
Probably fair. I mean, given they lost by 89 points, you'd have to suggest he was out-coached. I don't know that there was a lot he could have done to change some of that game because they were beaten at their number one thing, which was stoppages.
Yeah,
and when Richmond's dominating them and getting scores from that source, then the Giants essentially had no chance. So I don't know what magnets he could have swung to change that, really, but he probably made a couple of mistakes. Matt DeBoer had a bad game. He was the worst player on
but
the
But he was also half injured as well, wasn't
according
he?
According to the play ratings.
It was his knee or something. They're going to show, I'm not sure if they're going to show it actually, but they're going to talk about a piece of play on the couch tonight where I think it was the second stoppage of the game. And Dusty was at the stoppage, so DeBoer was on Dusty. And I remember watching it live, and Dusty then thought to himself, I'm going to drift forward here. So DeBoer went to Prestia, who was at the stoppage. Mm-hmm. And then as the ball was getting ready to be thrown up or a ball in, Dusty just slid back into the stoppage, and DeBoer was caught between Prestia and Dusty. Surely Leon Cameron should say, I mean, in my mind, Dusty was Norm Smith, but Dusty's playing as a forward. And he had one possession in the back half. DeBoer should be on Deon Prestia, who had 11 disposals in the first quarter.
Well, and he went to him in the second quarter and really clamped down.
Yeah,
on him.
But he should be on him from the start. Like, Dusty's a forward. We said it last week, a forward mid, not a mid forward. Yeah. Anyway.
I can certainly
well answered, Max.
Thanks.
Still got a couple more. Ben.
Yes, Tom.
GWS had a successful 2019.
Yes, absolutely fair. Absolutely
the fairest
fair.
Fair.
Yeah. but some people would say that they got to the grand final and failed ultimately, so that, hence their season is a failure.
But
so
17 failures.
Yes, then, and then Nathan Buckley said that he's considered his side's campaign a waste after that preliminary final loss. But what the Giants achieved amongst incredible adversity this year has to be admired. And I think, as Joey alluded to, that this is not the end of them. Their list is well positioned to attack a premiership again next season. They've put some great things in place, I think, to set that up as well. So it's far from a failure.
This was a club-building final series from them.
Yeah, I agree.
This built them for the future based on just the mentality they now have.
Operation Part 2 is to keep hold of Jeremy Cameron and Lockie Whitfield beyond next year. Re-sign them early.
Will they be able to do that before Round 1 next season?
I don't know, but they should be trying to do that and lock them in, because that will be the narrative. If things start to go wrong, why would Jeremy Cameron and Lockie Whitfield stay?
Yeah, I think Jeremy Cameron hinted that he was keen to open contract talks after the season finished. So that could be happening in the next couple of weeks.
Max, fair or farce, all players, and I'm passionate about this, on a premiership list should be awarded with a medallion.
Farce. No, the 22 on the day who won the game deserve the medals.
This really polarizes people, doesn't it?
I can't get my head around why we've all of a sudden started talking about this. This has been going on since 1897. The 22 players get the premiership.
Influence of international sport, surely.
And I think also there is more impact from players lower on the list in some ways than there were in previous times. You know, your 18, when there were very few interchanges in the game, were the most important thing going around. Now you have so much depth. Teams are required to dip into teams, and you have the mid-season draft, players like Mullin and Pickett coming in and taking spots off lists of players who've retired and things like that. You can understand how, when clubs are trying to create this whole club culture, people would say, well, they all had a part in it.
Of course.
But it's the same way of saying that you don't have really a premiership assistant coach.
No.
As we talked about with Nathan Buckley last week.
Yeah, you don't.
You have a premiership coach and that's it.
There's lots of people who have a part in the premiership. But in the end, it comes down to how you perform on that day. Yeah. And in the end, there's 22 players on the field and 18 at any one time on that day. So you give it to the 22 players. Ben, your thoughts?
No, I'm all for just the 22 on the day.
And it is brutal towards Bob Murphy. Absolutely. It's brutal towards Jack Graham. There's people every year.
No one could realistically say Bob Murphy is a premiership player. That would sound silly.
But also, but you're not saying... I would think that... I would feel uncomfortable if I was Bob Murphy getting awarded a medallion when I didn't play on the day.
That too.
You didn't play on the day. Everyone lives in the real world. Mm. You are disappointed because you didn't play on the day, whether you get a medallion or not. I mean, you might say, well, if the physical object doesn't mean anything, just give it to everyone. But no, it should be a special thing for those 22 players.
Yeah, I'm with you, Thomas.
I'm glad we got a consensus on that. Yeah. I was willing to have a fight. Ben,
yes.
GWS is right to give Heath Shaw another contract.
Yes, I think that's fair. I wouldn't go as far as saying that he deserves it or he's got the right to say whether he gets to play on or not. I think that's reserved for someone like a Gary Ablett. But I think he showed during the final series in particular, and grand final's probably not the best indication, even though his numbers were very, very good. Mm. But I think he's got I think he's got every right to go on again, and the Giants give him another contract. I think he did some good things. He's not offensively, I think, as strong as probably what he used to be, but I still think one-on-one that he's quite strong, and that you can certainly rely on him if you're Leon Cameron.
He's still one of their better players in defence. Yeah. You know? Why wouldn't you keep him around if he's of that quality? It's not about his stature at the club, but that also plays a part in it because, you know, with players like Delidio going, he's one of the older players there. You want those people sometimes.
Last fair or fast for the year. Oh. And is it to you, Max?
Hi.
Hi. Fair or fast, Damien Hardwick is an underrated great of the game. And I'm not talking because he's a great player or is a great coach, but combined, he is a great of the game. And let me give you some examples before you make your decision here. He was at Essendon and he played in the 2000 Premiership. He was then at Essendon when they lost the 2001 Grand Final. He then went to Port Adelaide where they won three minor premierships in a row and he played in the 2004 Grand Final. Then he was at Hawthorn as an assistant where they won flags. And now he's at Richmond where they've won two flags. He's been involved in successful footy clubs for the large majority of this century. Fair or fast, he's a great of the game.
Fast.
Okay.
I don't think...
I made my case.
It was a good case.
Look, it's a good case. If you're looking on paper, it's a fantastic case. I think as a coach, he's getting to that point. When you coach 2 and 3 years and have the chance to do 3 and 4 and all of that sort of stuff.
Oh, dynasty.
Yes, the dynasty.
Does he need another one?
I think so, to be considered an all-time great coach. I don't know that you can consider him and combine his playing and assistant coaching and everything to make it. Some of these things, when you talk about greats of the game, it's about the feel, not necessarily just the accolades.
Well, he's the only one I can think of that might be in the conversation based on half of one and half of the other. As in, he was a very good player, he's an excellent coach, but all greats of the game dominate one and the very best do both. For example, Lee Matthews.
Yeah, he's at the point where I think of him more as a coach than a player.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I don't think he can be considered a great at both.
No, but if they win the flag next year, they have a dynasty. Because I define as a dynasty 3 and 5 years.
I agree.
So Brisbane won 3 in a row, Hawthorn won 3 in a row, and Geelong won 3 in 5 years. And I think they've all had dynasties this century. Now, I got a bit of criticism on Twitter because people are saying, well, what about West Coast? West Coast have had a terrific. No, West Coast have had a terrific 20 years. They've played in grand finals. They've won two flags. They've been successful along the way. Mm. Two flags, yeah, two flags
in the last 20. Yeah,
yeah, but they're not a dynasty.
That what port? Which part of West Coast would be a dynasty?
That's maybe what my Perth friends don't understand.
Ooh, it's a whack for Perth.
I guess in the early '90s, you could say they were sort of one, but.
They won 2 and 3
But they missed out because they probably could have won another one in there. But
yeah, I think it's 3 and 5 years. That's where you really set a proper strong legacy.
There's a difference there between having a dynasty and being a great club for an extended period of time.
Absolutely.
West Coast has absolutely done that.
I couldn't agree more with that. And one other thing on our Perth friends and all non-Victorian friends. I couldn't care less if you are Victorian or South Australian or Queensland or New South Wales or from Canberra, I mean ACT, or Northern Territory or Tassie.
Hervey Bay.
There's some people that actually bias towards and against states. I'm Australian. I actually couldn't care less. So if you disagree with me, that's fine. But... don't presume it's because I'm a Victorian and I don't like people from other states. I love other states. I would love to live in Perth. What a great city. The cot on a Sunday is an absolute setup, but I can't because I live in Victoria doing footy.
One of the more incredible tangents to finish the last edition this year of Fair.
Well, we get
fast.
Accused of being biased.
I don't know. I've hated Queensland sometimes.
Oh. Was that dangerous by Sebastian Vettel?
Fast. 5 second time penalty. Great edition of Fair Fast.
Thank you. Tom. Thanks for listening this year.
It was a deep, deep edition of Fair Fast.
Yeah.
So, trade whispers time.
Yeah, about 10 minutes.
You recorded on... you're about to report on the couch. I already put up on foxfooty.com.au as well that Hugh Greenwood has joined, or is set to join the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, I'll speak about it on the couch tonight as well. I'm sure of that. 3-year deal with a trigger, a simple trigger. I think it's probably a games trigger. I can't quite bet that down, but it's a simple trigger for a 4th-year Hugh Greenwood. He's 27 years old. He's one of several Crows. I just want to, again, touch something up here. There's a narrative that all these Crows want to leave because the place is in turmoil. I think that's partially true for a small section of them, but I actually also think that the Crows are, and I know the Crows are reshaping their list, and there's actually a lot of them that it's quite mutual, a lot of these decisions. Josh Jenkins, I think, is quite a mutual call. They don't really want him. He doesn't really want to be there. Greenwood and Keith wanted long-term. They couldn't get long-term, so they're off. So it's not necessarily they're jumping off a sinking ship.
I think it's a combination of two things just happening to all happen at once.
Yeah.
That some players are still frustrated over the last 2 years and some players would naturally be leaving anyway.
We can dub it an exodus, though. That's because that's what it looks
like. Yeah, yeah. Well, so many experience. I mean, you can go through them. Betts, Ellis Yolman, Jenkins, Keith, Greenwood.
Yep.
There's so many. There's more. Jacobs.
I mean, the problem, it becomes an exodus if you have things like one of the Crouch brothers leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Brody Smith, yeah.
I don't think he's going to go.
No, and Rory Laird won't go as far as I can tell. But Brody Smith will only leave if they Brad Crouch, sorry, will only leave if they get pick one back in return.
From Gold Coast.
And you know, what stuffed the Suns up here? The Lachie Weller trade. Because as soon as they were willing to give pick two for Lachie Weller, every other club for the next decade goes, well, hang on, if you gave pick two for Lachie Weller, then we should ask for pick one for Brad Crouch.
That's a good point, actually. What about
before their trade with Brisbane, where they just gave up a first rounder?
Shifts the market.
Before we
Jared Lyons for free.
Move on to any other trade stuff. What about the Gold Coast handouts that were announced by the AFL on Monday?
In fact, the mailbag, we can open it up and Michael Mackey asks...
Wait a second.
Yep.
Mailbag.
Yep.
Mailbag.
Good stuff.
What's the point of the Suns getting more picks? Bigger clubs just poach them after they've matured, like we saw on the weekend. Do you think the AFL should give the Suns a higher salary cap instead so they can pay money to keep them?
So the Suns, for those who have missed it, have been given four extra draft picks over the next three drafts, really. Yep. They'll get pick one this year. They'll also get first pick of the second round, mid-first rounder next draft, and then the first pick of the second round, the draft after that in 2021, Tom. So there's also more allowances around their academies, so they've got a greater access to Darwin. Their rookie list has been expanded to 10 now on the rookie, so a significantly bigger rookie list than everyone else in the AFL. So from a list perspective, they've been given a great leg up here.
Yeah, they have. But the question is, do they deserve more? Do they deserve... Yeah, in terms of a salary cap, is what the mailbag question was.
Yes, do you think
I'd like to give them more money in the salary cap, but there's nothing that fixes this club more than good people in the right positions.
And time.
And I think they do have mostly very good people in the right positions. We've said it all year. But it takes time to be able to actually bed that down. And
so they've got the salary cap. What about the soft cap? Should there be a little extra in there?
I'd be giving much more money to the soft cap.
They're already spending a lot of money on wellness, I believe, as they call it.
Yeah, they are. But they're well under the soft cap. So even if they were allowed more money in the soft cap, they wouldn't actually be able to spend it all because they can't afford it. So then where else does the money come from?
Mm. So I think an underrated part in all this that you sort of mentioned in your little recap there was that they get academy players for free for 3 years.
Yes.
They do not need to match bids for academy players. And now this obviously depends on the quality of the players. But if you even get a second round quality player for free, you not only get that player, but you also get the draft picks you would have had to use to bid on them.
Mm. Yeah.
That's another five or six players possibly that you are getting into that club for free. That you could be getting 10, 12 draft picks over the next 3 years if you're the Suns.
It is all irrelevant if they can't satisfy one word, and that word is retention.
Of course.
If they can't retain any players who are signed two-year deals as per the AFLPA legislation when they get drafted, then they're cooked. And the same for every club. So if Lukosius leaves at the end of next year and King goes to St Kilda to join his brother, then where do they go? They can't continue to start again. At some stage, they've got to win some games and offer some hope to keep players at the club.
You know what I'd do if I was running the Gold Coast Suns? Rebrand. Change the logo. Use the colours differently.
Right.
Change the jumper. Change everything. Get rid of the stink that is the Gold Coast Suns brand right now and change everything. They need a refresh. They need an update. My opinion doesn't matter, but do this.
What colour would you change to?
Red and yellow can still work.
Away from Sunrise Vodka.
Potentially. That's not really my favourite, but potentially.
No.
Yeah, you need to do something. The look of the Suns right now, just it feels bad.
Right.
And clubs have changed their logos and had immediate success in many, many sports. The New England Patriots.
But like a total rebrand? Like to the point you're talking about?
The Gold Coast Vampires.
You don't need to be the Southport Sharks now, for example.
Yes, the Sharks.
But you can still be the Suns if you want to. I believe Jeff Kennett called this whole thing socialism on Trade Radio today. Maybe they're the Gold Coast Socialists,
Marxism.
Whatever you want to do.
They're
already red and yellow.
The Brisbane Lions had a lot of stink about them.
As the Bears or as the
Lions? No, as the Lions 4 years ago. And they got the right people in place and look at them now. And but I love the Lions.
I would also say that the Lions brand at that point was probably stronger than what the Gold Coast Suns brand is now. And that, I think, is predominantly because of the history that was incorporated via Fitzroy,
and,
I think.
And the weird thing is they're an AFL creation because they're a merger of two clubs, the Brisbane Lions. But you think about them now, they feel like a football club. The Gold Coast Suns, people still say derisively, they're a franchise. Mm. I don't know that that's going to change without just the progression of time naturally, but I feel like at least changing their jumper, which I do not like, and some of their colours, some of their design, you need some sort of freshen up. I think that would really help.
Strong for Maxi. Really strong take here on the Fox Footy podcast. Anything else from the mailbag that was worthy?
There's lots of other questions actually there. Yes, there were. I saw something about the grand final entertainment, Max. I'd like
KB,
to answer that.
KB writes in, one of many of them, I suppose. Was that the most underwhelming grand final entertainment we've seen in a while? P.S. The a cappella national anthem was a great idea.
Yes, no, this should, and I know this is a big idea of Craig Hutchison, but I'm all for a cappella national anthems because you don't have to worry about a backing track,
yes,
about any fallback. You yes. don't have to worry about anything. You can sing it in your own key. You don't have to worry about someone else's key. All for the a cappella backing tracks. Maybe Dean Lewis, I think, probably should have sang a little bit more a cappella because what he was working with, he's a bit more... Tom, I said that Dean Lewis was probably more pitchy than a late day five SCG track.
Accurate.
I think Dean Lewis was talented, but it's not really my sort of music. No. I will say Tones and I.
That was good.
Yeah, well, I just think... She picked the wrong set. I like Dance Monkey, but I would be playing... what's the song?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you said it before that I can't remember. Yeah.
I do not know any of her songs, so I cannot contribute to that. I don't think Dean Lewis was the right pick just as a vibe. He made no sense. He's singing about breakups before the grand final. Mm. It's making me feel great.
Yeah.
Pumped up for footy.
Yeah. Paul Kelly was good. Paul Kelly, I think, found a nice balance.
Oh, yes.
Yes. He came in and kind of half saved the day a little bit.
Do some classics.
If I'm Dan, Tones and I.
Oh, yeah. He's gone to Spotify here.
I'm doing Dance Monkey and yes. I'm doing Johnny Runaway or Jimmy or maybe all three, but I'm not doing The Kids Are Coming. I don't think The Kids Are Coming was a great start.
But the kids had it on their tracksuits. They got the dress ups. They had to do the song. I don't know why they had the dress ups. It was too hot for tracksuits.
I think Paul Kelly was probably the best on ground in terms of the grand final entertainment. Anything else from the mailbag?
I think that's probably it.
We've got some more. Come on.
Oh, I thought we had to wrap up, but I'll.
No, we don't. We've got one or two more.
Right, hang on. Let me refresh the tweet. Thank you, everyone who did write in.
Yes. And we do appreciate your questions right throughout the 2019 AFL season on the Fox Footy podcast today, brought to you by Nutri-Grain, which has jumped on board for the end of the Fox Footy podcast, Unstoppable Nutri-Grain.
Shane Mawson asks, after the big loss on the weekend, did GWS need to chase an experienced halfback wing player? Need someone with premiership experience? Perhaps Birchall or a Camden McIntosh?
Aren't they going to get that Matthew Pretty via Brandon Ellis?
GWS.
Sorry, I've been doing the Suns.
No, I think GWS's list is pretty good. They need to retain Whitfield and Cameron, and then maybe they could use someone in that position, but I think they've got the nucleus of a premiership list if they can get it together at the right time and Canelio comes back in with Callan Ward and Phil Davis isn't walking with a pebble in his boot.
I know they just got to the grand final, but you'd think they have to change something about the way they try and score. It didn't work for a lot of this season. They only won 13 games. Scoring from stoppages, we know, is not the consistent way to score in footy nowadays, and that's why Richmond won the flag, because they had that turnover game.
I'm not worried about the Giants list at all, because on the weekend, none of their first-round draft picks from the 2018 draft played. So no Haitley, no Xavier O'Halloran, no Jai Cordwell, no Aiden Bonner as well, who was their first-round draft pick from last year's draft. The key is trying to keep them. If they can keep them, the list is in a very, very strong position.
And funnily enough, none of the top three from the 2012 draft played either.
That's right.
That's right, yeah. Hey, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure on the podcast this year. Max, I think you've been at your absolute best.
Oh,
Ben, as a host, you've set the agenda and you've been absolutely superb on a week-to-week basis, always enthusiastic, always informative, and always with a smile on your face.
And Tom, you showed up.
All the best. We'll probably do a couple of bonus editions of the podcast at the trade period as well.
Could I just quickly, before we finish, can I get your tip for the 2020 flag?
Yes, Richmond.
I mean, you can't go past Richmond right now, can you?
Well, I couldn't go past West Coast or Melbourne last year.
No, I did. I tipped a Melbourne-Richmond grand final with Melbourne winning.
No, I'm not tipping Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
No.
Disappointing.
I'm tipping... I like West Coast. I like the Eagles.
So you're back on side with the Perth people.
No. Ben, you know my thoughts. I love the cod on a Sunday.
Thanks, Jared.
Cod on a Sunday.
Cod is low pub. Yeah,
fair enough.
You clearly know it because you're nicknaming it.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't nickname it. People in Perth call it the cot.
Mr. WA over here. Ridiculous.
You know, if you want to go to Johannesburg, the quickest way to get there is via Perth.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, non-stop would be quicker.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to the summer of cricket, Ben?
On Fox Cricket and 501. Congratulations.
But are you looking forward to watching the summer of cricket?
Yeah, I am, Tom.
Max?
I can't look past trade at the moment. I can't lie.
Yeah. It's a big 3 weeks, and then I go on holiday for a month. I might go to North Korea.
Wow.
Why?
because I'm going to Seoul and you can go to the border and step foot in North Korea.
Wow, you are a bit of a dictator, actually. So I've got one more question.
Yes.
Who's going to be the biggest fish that drops in the trade period?
I think Joe Danaher will be the biggest one.
I think it's one we don't know yet, and I am not going to bother throwing a dart. But someone will go that we don't expect.
Yeah, one that we don't know. People, some people ask me, "Oh, who's going to be traded that we haven't heard about yet?" I'm telling you, everyone that could be traded has been spoken about somewhere at some stage in the media.
And you're not going to tell them without reporting it first.
Yeah, if I find out, trust me, I will know, and my boss will know before you know. Yeah.
Lockie Neal was probably the big surprise from last year.
But it was sort of done by this point. It was out there by this point.
And Dane Beams
was a big surprise because he said in his speech
best and fairest
at the Brisbane Lions, best and fairest, I'm not going anywhere. Then he went somewhere. Mm. And on another note, why do people trust everything people say in the media?
Yes. Because you're lying constantly, Tom.
Oh, my God.
Because people don't want to trust the media. That's
every word, though, that's spoken on the Fox Footy podcast, yes, thanks to Nutri-Grain Unstoppable, is true. Keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.